in to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode number 204 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. You got a text there, Sean?
No, I'm just turning my ringer off.
Ah, very wise.
So I brought a ring while we are recording.
How you doing? You okay?
Very good, very, very good.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about grass. About walking.
No, we're not.
We're not.
That's next week.
Took the minute.
There may be some. No, we can carry on. That's not how we do it on this show.
Your brain doesn't work today. I'm looking at walking on the screen.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because the weird thing is, we decided to do podcasts, didn't we? And the national month of May is the same month for these two things we're talking about.
Hence,
so the first one that we're talking about, if I just look down, don't look what I was looking at, is it's the month of local community history.
In May, okay. Something I could do with a little bit of help with, really.
Yeah.
That's a walk.
And, of course, you could walk around the community.
It's the best way to learn about a place, isn't it? Just stroll around, have a little look, have a chat with the odd person here and there.
Mm.
Anyway, this week we're talking about kind of why is the grass always greener? Why are we never satisfied? Satisfaction, I guess, is what it comes down to. But we'll come on to that in a bit. First up, liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. For anyone who hasn't had a look, go check it out. There'll be lots of show notes and links from this, and all the previous episodes are online there too. If you stick your email address in the box, we'll send you weekly alerts for this podcast and the other things that we do every now and again. So, yeah, highly worth it. And another mention to our pals at clearmindcushion.com. Our friend Chris has developed an amazing cushion which helps with posture and comfort during meditation. And if you use the code SELFHELP, all one word, on the website clearmindcushion.com, you get 10% off. Pretty cool, eh?
Very good. And I'm doing another road test tomorrow with a course, a mindfulness course that I'm running. Mm. So I'm using the three, well, there's four really, because you can sit in a chair.
Yep.
But there's a meditation still, traditional cushions, and then there's the clear mind cushion.
What would your classic Buddhist monk in like the hills, the Tibetan, or the foothills of the Himalaya, what will they be using? Will they be using just nothing? Or do they have like
they
some
could be
kind
using just nothing, or they could be using some kind of cushion that's stuffed with something that's fairly hard. It could be kind of yak hair, or most of the cushions I've ever used have been stuffed with grains.
Yeah.
Or husks, and then you can fill them up and take them out. So they are quite hard, although because they are granular, they do shape to your bum,
yep,
kind of thing. Mm. Whereas Chris's cushion is quite magical because it uses two kinds of foam, one which moulds and one which is hard.
Yep.
So you get the best of both worlds in it, really.
Okay, it's good. Yeah, just intrigued. What have you been up to? You okay?
We have been doing a lot of physical. So yesterday we were around Delamere Forest.
Yeah, lovely.
Which is quite amazing.
Yeah.
And we went round the route where you walk underneath the Go 8.
Underneath it?
Yeah, and there's all people.
Oh, the zip wire?
Yeah. Oh. And people going across on kind of rope bridges and things, you know, where they have to jump.
I've never done the Go 8 there, actually.
Yeah, it's quite amazing looking at it.
But yeah, it's a cool space, isn't it? And you did the Gruffalo Trail, did you?
Around to the Gruffalo.
You stumbled across the Gruffalo.
No, we came around to the Gruffalo. We had two older girls with us who were acting like children and going, quick, I want my photograph taken with the Gruffalo.
I like the Gruffalo too. Big hit in our house.
Have you been there lots of times?
Twice. Once with you, actually.
Yeah,
fairly recently. Yeah, we haven't done it too many times, but it's cool. Yeah, it's good and nice to get out and about. I've been out and about a lot in the last couple of days too. I've been using physical exertion as like a form of therapy. I've been digging a big hole in the garden. I'm filling it in again. But
so why are you digging a hole?
Good question. Funny you should ask that. When we moved into our current house, we had a pond in the back, which looked lovely. But apparently ponds and child number one was imminent back then, didn't mix. So we had a short-term fix of basically getting rid of the pond and filling it in with a load of rubble and trees that we'd found in the woods and all sorts, and then levelling it over so it looked semi-decent with pebbles and stuff. But the time has come to level up, really.
So what's it going to be?
We're just going to pave right over it. So, you know, we've got stonework in the garden before the lawn, by the lawn. So we're just going to have that kind of stonework right the way across. So seamless, big patio, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But I had to dig everything out, get all the blooming logs and like broken bricks and all sorts that was in there. Lob all that to the side, fill it back in because the guy that's coming to do it wanted it kind of like two inches below the current level so that he could then sand, bit of cement mix, I don't know what it is he's doing, and then he can lay the stones. So did all that myself.
Yeah.
With a bit of help from the lads and B, and it's quite good fun, actually. Yeah, a really good couple of days. Just
got a bit of physical.
Yeah, with a pickaxe, and I can kind of recommend it. It's looking quite cool, even yet. We're still kind of, you know, the guy's got to come and do his thing, but recycled the bits that we didn't need anymore, made a little path into the woods and used some of the logs to kind of make an edging for the path.
That's good.
You should come see it, it's cool.
Very good.
So yeah, it's good. Should we crack on?
Yep.
Crack on. This was your idea, so what are we talking about?
You know, someone said to me, why is it that we always want to leave where we are to go on holiday, and the people that live where we go on holiday are leaving where they are to go on holiday somewhere else? Why can't we just be happy with where we are? Why do we keep having to go somewhere else?
Okay.
And I thought, that's interesting.
Discuss. Okay, well, isn't it initially something that we just like a change of scenery just to kind of get us away from them, or the mundanity of our lives, or is that...
But maybe that they're only mundane because that's the way we look at it. I'm reminded that there's an advert on the telly, I couldn't tell you what it's for, but it goes on about someone becoming nose blind. Like they can't smell what their room smells like anymore. Whereas someone else coming into it can smell it, and it stinks, kind of thing. But they don't smell it. And I wonder whether we become place blind, that we cease to see the magic of where we are. So I was brought up in London, and when I was very small, you know, kids could get around, we would go to the museums. But as an adult, I never went to the museums. And I never went and did all those things that were there that people come in from the outside of London to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, well, we should differentiate as well between the type of holiday where you go to experience somewhere and you're actually consciously looking around museums maybe, or looking for little details here and there, and the type of holiday where you're just jetting up over a couple of time zones, landing, and then just spending 2 weeks by a pool or on a beach or something like that.
But in theory, you could go, I mean, in Britain, you know, that far away from the coast, even if you live right in the middle of the country, you know, so it's like you could actually go to the coast either side and do the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
But we want to get out of the country, we want to do something new, and I get that's the new experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the thing that makes it for me on a holiday is the issue about nobody wants anything and no one needs anything. And when I'm far away, people can't get at me. For stuff, you know.
Even in today's technological age of emails.
Well, if you make sure you go places where there isn't a phone signal, then you're fine.
I've seen you play that trick a couple of times, in recent years.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good, that sense about, it's okay, I'm offline now.
Yeah.
You know, and that for me is going somewhere else. I don't get when I'm here. I could create it when I'm here, couldn't I? I could turn everything off. I could go and park the car around the corner so no one knows it's here. And come back. So I could do it here, but I tend not to. I tend to play the game of if I go somewhere else, it's going to be relaxing.
Yeah, well, we go to our little haunt up in Northumberland kind of 2-3 times a year. And William, my eldest, has kind of asked, you know, starting to ask, can we live here, Daddy? Can we live here? Because it's so much fun. And we, you know, we go to unwind for a week, 2 weeks, sometimes a bit longer. And I'm trying to explain to him that if we actually lived there, that I'm not sure it would be a great place to live for folks of our age, kind of nearish to towns, airports, schools, all that kind of thing. But she's not quite getting just yet, but I'm sure one day he will.
Yeah.
I've got family that live there, so I don't want to slate it too much. It would be a lovely place to live, but the pace of life is completely different.
Yeah.
We like to just dip in and out, you know.
Yeah. But that's interesting, isn't it? It's like the pace of life is different. Does that mean that it's kind of slower and calmer where you are? Rather than where you would be.
Well, how healthy is that for us? You know, we're going 100 miles an hour for whatever 40 odd weeks a year, and then every few months we allow ourselves just to slow it down. Is that a healthy way to live?
I don't know. How many people don't get a holiday at all?
I know. Yeah, there's a lad that kind of cycles round our neighbourhood where we live, and he kind of pops in to see us every now and again, and he's kind of I don't know what's going on at home or what have you, but you ask him what he's done and where he's been, or if he's going on holiday this year, and it's just nothing at all. And I've asked him, you know, places nearby to us, you know, that really nice places to go, Brimstage Hall, Claremont Farm. Mm. Have you ever been there, Matthew? No. He's like, oh, blimey, mate. Like, yeah. I feel so sorry for him.
But... what did you take him?
I could do, couldn't I?
Yeah.
I could do, really. Yeah, I'll work with his mum, but... Yeah. Funny, innit? So we are lucky. Maybe we're... Yeah.
One of the things that it makes me question, and the conversation that ensued with the guy that asked me this, was the issues of... Is it that the grass is always greener, as in what I've got is not enough, therefore I need something else? And then I was thinking about, could you apply the same thing to houses? Cars?
Certainly. Relationships?
Relationships, yeah. And I suppose one of my... and I don't know whether this is a generational issue, but one of my kind of horrors at the moment is watching how people, what I see as deforming their bodies.
Yeah.
Because to have Botox or lip fillers or whatever, it seems to be more beautiful than what I've got. So what I've got is not enough. I've got to turn it into something else.
Mm.
And that kind of bothers me at all kinds of levels. But the idea that, can I ever be content with what I've got? And does that mean that the neighbourhood that I live in is never enough? Or is it enough, you know?
Yeah. I know, it's complex. Because, yeah, we're at that stage of life really where we're in that, I've said before on the show, nice little three-bed, or decent-sized three-bed end terrace, you know, it's perfectly great size for us. But, yeah, in terms of, like, what our friends are starting to do and what our parents did, now is this time of life when we're supposed to be making that next step up, you know, to a house with four bedrooms and a bigger driveway and a bigger garden and all that. So I'm just trying to, yeah, consciously take a step back from that.
I suppose that the question that comes on with that is, like, why?
Yeah.
You know, we live in a semi here, and which is lovely. It does everything I need it to do. It's beautiful. Love the area that it's in. And I've had three enormous houses in my life, all of which were a pain in the backside because the amount of money that it costs to upkeep and the amount of time that it takes, just cutting the grass is enough.
Yeah.
You know. And that thing about you can only live one room at a time. Doesn't matter how many bathrooms you've got, you only use one at a time.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. So, yeah, I get the idea that people are aspirational.
Yeah, I'm not immune to it, because, yeah, we drive to different parts of the world and whatever you, some of the more affluent parts, especially, like, driving through Caldy or Lower Heswell, bits of those, you're like, blimey, neck, who lives in these houses is amazing. But then, you know, our little funny little horseshoe of houses, we know all our neighbours really well. I can nip to the Co-op on my bike in, like, 2 minutes, pick some stuff up. Super-duper handy. Schools right by the motorway, yada, yada, yada. Mm. It's perfect, really. So, yeah, just trying to resist those urges, if you know what I mean.
But the thing about looking at someone's big house in Caldy or something like that is that when you're this side of the gate, it looks amazing. And maybe when you're on the other side of the gate, it does look amazing. Until you get involved in the whole process of having to maintain it. Mm. And that can even mean decorating it, because it's like the Severn Bridge. Now, you start at one end and you decorate through, and by the time you get to the other end, you need to start the other end again. It's like it's a never-ending master.
Yeah.
And like one of the things that I feel about possessions particularly is that they end up owning us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we end up working for them, whether it is for the car or for the house or whatever. But sometimes when people get involved in, I must go on a certain kind of holiday, the holiday ends up owning them rather than they own the holiday, because they've got to work so hard to get the holiday to go somewhere else other than where they are.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm fascinated by people who, I mean, we live on a peninsula, which is always known as the Insular Peninsula, and people can get that kind of insular feeling about it. And some people never leave it. Some people have never been abroad, as it were.
Like, as in Liverpool.
Yeah, as close as that. I mean, the idea that Chester is a long way away.
Yeah, well, Chester is a kind of foreign land to me, because it's just not somewhere we go for either shopping or for even, you know, meals or any of that.
I must take you abroad to Chester.
You must, because, I can't remember the last time I went, really. I haven't been in years. So, but it looks really nice. But, you know, I go to North Wales and I go to Northumberland, and I went abroad last week. I'm pretty lucky, really. There's a blog that I'm going to link to on psychcentral.com called The Grass is Greener Syndrome, and What Is It? So the hallmark of the grass is greener syndrome is the idea that there is always something better that we are missing. So rather than experiencing stability, security and satisfaction in the present environment, the feeling is there. There's always more and better elsewhere, and anything less than ideal won't do. So why are we averse to stability and security? Why do we always...
I think what happens is it's a neurological thing where I think we become addicted to dopamine, which is the drive for new, more lust, all that kind of stuff, which fires up our system, as opposed to oxytocin, which is the stable, bonded, I'm okay, I'm content, I'm happy where I am, doing what I'm doing.
So yeah, we're always looking for that little rush of chemicals.
In mindfulness, you talk about craving. People are craving things all the time.
Yeah.
And the crave is the drive. And the classic for me would be the person who sees something in a shop, they keep going looking out through the window, in the end they go in and touch it. And they build up this enormous craving, the anticipation to get it. And by the time they've actually saved the money or whatever they've done, got it on credit, and they get this thing, once they've got it, the drive's gone.
Mm.
And the thing about the object wasn't the object, it was the drive that they were addicted to. So now they've, in psychospeak, you say a love object. So now they've achieved that love object. They can take it home and put it in the cupboard and forget about it. And then the need to crave goes on to the next one. Because one of the things that people say to me, I mean, you go back to the same place in Northumberland a lot.
Yep. Yeah.
We find places that we like and we go back to them. And some people say to me, why would you want to go to the same place twice?
Yeah, we get that a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But what people are saying to me when they say that is the person who goes to the same place maybe a lot of times is living on that oxytocin, bonded, contented, it's a calmer, stress-less way of being. Somebody who is needing to go new places, new experiences, new things all the time is craving the dopamine hit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the idea of satisfaction is non-existent when you're a dopamine junkie. You've always got to go for something more, something new, something different.
Do we need that as humans, though? I mean, or have we needed it in terms of our development?
I think there's times when we do, but maybe it's the ages of man, you know, that there are times in your development where, yeah, you need that dopamine to drive you to achieve what you need.
Yeah.
But in the society that we live in, with things like advertising, and what we were talking about before a couple of episodes ago about the propaganda stuff, yeah, it's like people are persuading us that we need the stuff. You know, we now need to have artificial grass because real grass is no longer good enough.
Yeah.
You know, we need to have new bathrooms and new kitchens.
Well, part of the excavation in my garden in recent days was to lay a new bit of turf. Kind of, we pulled up some bricks from around the side of the house and created this extra bit of grass. So we owe for the short term fix of buying a rolled up turf from a nursery nearby.
So real turf though.
Yeah, real turf. Yeah, it's not like this plastic stuff. Yeah. It's rather than, you know, putting the soil down and putting the seeds down and watering it, it's like, whoop, get it done, man. Let's get that grass in.
Instant grass.
Yeah.
It's like laying a carpet.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's good.
Good, but it's real, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you're getting a bit of AstroTurf, aren't you?
Yeah, we got a kind of a postage stamp in the middle of this design, which will be AstroTurf. Yeah.
So you can have a lawnmower going spare soon.
Yeah. I'll rent it to you.
Okay, well, coming on then, because this it goes to all aspects of life, really. So let's move on to relationships then, which we've discussed many times on the show before, but in terms of the grass has always been greener. You do a lot of couples work. Do you have kind of serial
monogamous
philanderers? People that are always looking for the next one. And then, well, how do you advise them? I mean, how do you help those people? Because
I think the issue is about people having to developing the awareness so they can see what's going on.
Yeah.
If they choose to maintain being a dopamine junkie and going from relationship to relationship or affair to affair, they have to do that with awareness.
Mm.
And realising that there's a consequence to behaviour that could be anything.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a case of... I don't see it like people need to change. I see it more like people need to be aware of what they're doing and then make the choice. Do they choose to change?
Mm.
You know. But if you are a dopamine junkie, whatever you have will not be good enough.
Right.
Yeah, whichever area you're looking in. It could be that you're...
Can you fix that? Or, I mean, can you come down from that high or that need for the high?
Yeah. But that's a case of mindfulness. It's a case of observing what's going on in your system and making a choice. Do I go with this? Do I go with this? What do I do?
Mm.
Yeah. And there's times when it is appropriate to go for something crazy. And there's times when, like, no, what you need to do now is to just stop and not do whatever the it is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to go to Northumberland and chill out for a week or two.
But it's a cool place to be. But I know lots of people that would be there would be bored.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not enough dopamine-stimulating stuff in there to walk down that amazing beach, to play with the children, to do all that stuff, would be mainly okay if you're a calm kind of person.
It takes a bit of getting into a trip like that as well, and I've read about this, you know, people that have worked on, you know, expensive, like, safari trips where they get, you know, really wealthy, high-flying business folk in for a week or a two-week trip, and they do say that, and I experience it, the first two or three days are tricky.
Now, that's because when you go on holiday, your levels of adrenaline and cortisol and the other chemistry that you use to do your normal work, which is like the fuel you work on, is high.
Well, it's an increased high as well for me, especially because I'm kind of that last day. I have to work so hard to get everything done.
Yeah, what happens when you go on holiday is those levels slowly drop down. Now, what that usually means is it can take... say someone goes on holiday on Saturday, they arrive emotionally and chemically till maybe the Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what happens is that they'll spend the next 2 weeks chilled out. But when they come to go back to work, they'll say, oh, I can't be arsed, it takes a long time to get going. No energy. Yeah. But then once they've been back for 2 or 3 weeks and the chemistry's come back up to level, that's when they're actually going, oh, I feel like I've never been away. And it's because the chemistry's the same as when they went.
But
when you do mindfulness and you do your meditation, which I'm sure you're doing every day,
of course, God,
Pinocchio, what happens is that you lower those levels of adrenaline, cortisol several times a day when you stop. And that's when you're getting out of that dopamine junkie phase. So I it's easy to see mindfulness as a fix for lots of things or all things. But there are loads of things that it works with, because what it does, out of everything that people will tell you about mindfulness enables you to have a choice. It enables you to choose where you're going to put your energy. And that's the key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Social media is on the rise, or has been, and maybe it's peaked, who knows. Isn't helping that much, is it, with this kind of grass is greener thing? Because
social media is always illustrating the amazing things that you can have, do or be.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And on Facebook, the level of advertising is increasing all the time. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
And they reckon, does it get more hits than Google now? Something like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can believe that, for sure.
Yeah. So the within that social... page which has lots of stuff about people telling you the best of their experience,
mm-hmm.
yeah, which may be only be like 5 or 10% of their life, but that's the bit you see, yeah, and you believe that's all of it, and sort of mixed in that is all this advertising, have this stuff as well.
Yeah, man, can't be that great for us, can it? But yeah, not like you say, but I, you know, I'm sure we're all in the position, if you are a social media nut like myself, where you're looking, checking Facebook and Twitter all day. And Instagram, that if you know a person well enough, particularly friends and family, where you are seeing all their good bits on Instagram and you know them well enough to know some of the stuff that's going on in their lives. Yeah, not rubbish, but maybe they're papering over some of the cracks you know, that stuff's been going on in their lives. You know,
and they might be saying that they really love this thing and you know they didn't because they told you something else.
So, you've got to be a bit wary of what you see online, haven't you?
Yeah. But I think that this principle about being aware of what you've got and where you are and valuing it, I guess, is going to be true in any area of your life, any area at all. So the thing for me about where I live is it's an amazing place. And the more I get to know about it, the more amazing it becomes. But I don't want to get to the point where I become place blind, like nose blind. I want to still be interested in it. And I'm amazed at some of the footpaths and where they go and all that kind of stuff, and bits that I've never been to.
Loads of walks, yeah. We did a little stroll this morning near to us, and yeah, found a new couple of paths to do a nice little loop from where we had brekkie. Lovely.
Yeah,
and I'll just... Shall I move on to my resource of the week?
Yeah, what's your resource of the week?
You may have seen it on Channel 4 News recently-ish. There's a former tech Google guy who basically left Google, I think, and then set off on this quest to find the true meaning of happiness or the meaning of life. And he's come up with this equation for happiness, basically. There's a little YouTube video and a blog post as well I'll link to, which explain it and how he arrived at it. And he's not had an easy innings the last few years because he lost his son, who was, I think, in his early 20s, from the pictures I've seen. So he's had a rough ride to really... He admitted he had to kind of test his principles of the work he was doing. But the basics were that happiness is kind of equal to or greater than the difference between how your life is and the expectation of how your life should be. So it's that, expectation that you need to work on.
Yeah.
You don't need to necessarily expect nothing from life. Or maybe you do. Maybe that is. Maybe that's what he's getting at.
Maybe it's to do with the expectation, because the things that we're looking at here, in many ways, are material things. Mm. It's places, it's objects, possessions, and even your face is a possession that we might want to change or whatever.
Yeah.
The thing that gets me, I mean, we talk about resource, is that there's two things I'd flag up. One is, if you bought an ordnance survey map of your area, and people don't use maps anymore because they keep using sat-navs, but if you actually looked at a map of your area and you looked at where all the historical sites are, and then you went and got to know them and had a look around, you'd see where you live completely differently, wherever you are, in a town, in the country, whatever. We were talking about months, and this month is Local and Community History Month, the whole of May.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'd say go and have a look if there's a local history society, that kind of stuff, and have a look around. What's actually in your area that you don't know?
Yep.
Yeah? And the other thing I'd say, which I will put a link up, is that I've watched a few videos on TED Talks recently about people who have different kinds of deformities. There was one guy who was born with a cancer in the middle of his face, and had a very... He wasn't ugly. He was the kind of face that you look at and go, whoa.
Mm.
Yeah, it looked like he'd been made up for a Doctor Who episode. But when you got into his face, it was quite an amazing face.
Mm.
And a couple of people that had congenital deformities. Talking about what a tough time they've had. And in the talks, because they were TED Talks, they were talking about how they were engaged and enjoying who they were, as opposed to rejecting it.
Trying to hide from the world. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a completely different kind of thing to me, to the person who's rushing around looking for Botox and implants.
Yeah.
Different kind of personality.
Mm.
Yeah.
And expectation, isn't it? And yeah.
Well, I suspect that the person who'd learned to live with their deformity or their disability was actually in a healthier emotional state than the person that was rushing around trying to get Botoxed.
Yep.
I suspect.
I got to check that TED Talk out, man. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, you're done?
Yeah, I'm good.
Interesting one as ever. Livingthepresent.co.uk are all the show notes and links. Check out clearmindcushion.com and use the code SELFHELP, all one word. Yeah.
And I'll let you know how I get on with my next experiment with the cushions.
Ah, please do.
See where we go.
Fantastic. Yeah. And next week, as we gave away early on, we're talking about walking, are we?
Yeah. We are.
Mindfulness walking. Yeah, okay. Cool.
We're going to get there.
Have a good week, Sean.
You take care.
See you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
So...